meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you very much. Welcome everybody to the March the 2nd call for the implementation oversight team for the independent review process. We are a small group, hoping that nonetheless some more of us will gather during this call. And even though we're small, I would like to press on and have a call and have it on the record so we can ensure that those who can't join us today could listen to the record and find out what happened. I want to begin by asking if there is anyone on audio who was not present in the Adobe room so that we can have an accurate roll call. Hearing none, I'll then ask, does anybody that's on the call have any updates, changes, et cetera, to their statements of interest? Again, hearing none, let's dive into the agenda, but let me make one parenthetical comment. We have on the call today Reg Levy of the Registry Stakeholder Group and Minds and Machines. I am taking part as a participant in a chairing skills pilot program that ICANN is running, and Reg has kindly volunteered to act as a coach. And so her job during this call is to simply watch, basically, and she and I will have a discussion sometime following the call in that effort towards chairing skills development. And so that is, as you all know, this is a closed group, but that's Reg's role in this call, and I'm very grateful to her for it. And so now let's press on. The second item on the agenda following the administration bits is considering our comments. And as you all have heard me say in the past, our job is becoming largely operational slash advisory with respect to actions like standing up and standing up the standing panel, getting expressions of interest out. That's ICANN's job, but we will helping SOs and ACs cull through people who will apply to become members of the standing panel, looking at the administrative support for IRP, all of those things. But the rules are our decisional role, and these are really important for us. We've had many good and many involved comments, and so we have a bit of a mountain to climb in a relatively short time. I'm going to ask Bernie if he could speak to the schedule that we should pursue for finishing comments and for doing some upcoming calls in the month of March. I will then mention a little bit about ICANN 58. Bernie, could you also talk about the tool that you're developing for us to use? And then I will again talk about volunteers for picking up specific issues, and we need to try and get through this quickly. So, Bernie, could I ask you to comment?
Thank you, David. First of all, we are March 2nd, and the report on the public consultation has been extended to March 29th. Now, this is the length of our consultation already got extended. We pushed out the report, but we do have to produce a report as per the rules for public consultations. And the problem is we've got ICANN 58 in Copenhagen next week in the middle of this, and it's going to take up a bit of time. So there are no meetings scheduled during the Copenhagen meeting, obviously. But we have a meeting on Thursday the 23rd of March, and then on the 30th of March, 1 week later, which is a day later. So we only have, after this one, two meetings to provide the input to staff so we can write this up and post it so that everyone who did take the time to publish comments knows that they were looked at and what we're planning to do with them. Now, in that context of what we're planning to do with them, you did get the original spreadsheet that sort of was staff's take on where the comments landed. There are different ways to look at that, but it was just to get the team started. Additionally, we've created some forms in Google Docs for each of those categories of comments which is trying to help people take on one of the comments for the less significant ones and go through them and provide recommendations for this group to look at so that we can approve those and then get them into the report for the comment. That's about it for me, unless there are questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Bernie. And thank you for the tools you've already given us, especially the spreadsheet, the compilation of comments. Those are very valuable, and so I would commend them again for use by members of the team. Bernie, I do have a question for you. We do have calls, as you mentioned, later in March. In the month of March, after ICANN 58, are there any other available time slots? And I ask knowing that the time slots themselves are hard to come by with competition among a number of groups for these time slots. Can you speak a little bit to that?
Yes, sir. Basically, we've got until March 19th booked off, as that is a Sunday. ICANN 58 closes officially on March 16th, which is the Thursday, giving a few days for people to get back home and get through the weekend. Starting on March 20th, that's the week we've got the 23rd schedule at 1900 on the Thursday, and then the 30th later on. There are still quite a few slots open, amazingly. This is exceptional, but I think a lot of groups are waiting to see what's going to happen at the plenary before they start booking slots. So I've got a number of good slots for the weeks of the 20th and the 27th that are still open if we want to schedule additional calls.
Thank you, Bernie. Again, it's David McCauley for the transcript. So let's speak a little bit about ICANN 58 for a moment. I am going to do my best to get some space. I might be able to get some VeriSign space or something else. And hopefully park there for a couple of hours. And I will send an invite to those folks on this team who may be in Copenhagen for the meeting to come by and chat with me and talk about the consideration of the rules in any event. And when I do that, hopefully I'll be able to do that, I will come out to the list with a notice of date, time, place, that kind of thing. And then finally on this number two of the agenda, and I need to try and slow down. I apologize, Caboose. It is important that people step up and volunteer to take on an issue presented in the comments. And in this respect, I would commend again the good spreadsheet that Bernie put out, and we can remail it if needed, where the issues are listed by issue, and then subheadings under that include comments by various commenters. Some issues just have one commenter, other issues have many, as we'll see. And so we need help. There's a tall mountain to climb. And so I'll ask people, please, to consider stepping up and volunteering. And then based on what Bernie said about the meeting schedule and the schedule that we need to try and meet, obviously we need to try and make progress on the list. So before we get into the actual substantive discussions, let me try and answer Aubrey's question in the chat and simply saying I'm going to make myself available. It could either be private or a group meeting, just in case anyone needs any help on considering which issues to pick or anything like that. It's not meant to be a formal moving the ball forward for the group, sort of an administrative kind of discussion. It sounds to me like that would be appropriate, but if there's any concerns, you can let us know on the list. Now, having wrapped up number two, I would like to begin the substantive discussions. And as we all know, the time within which a claim has to be filed generated a lot of discussion. Becky and Malcolm and I then presented a question to Sidley, our outside counsel. And Sidley came back and confirmed that there is a problem with the timing, a problem that Malcolm noted. And so Malcolm has kindly volunteered to take the lead on this discussion. And if it's okay with you, Malcolm, I'm now going to turn the floor over to you.
Thank you, David. I've circulated an analysis that I did of the public comments received on the mailing list yesterday. And I think that it is worth starting by going through that so that we don't, really because people took time to make public comments, and I think it's entirely appropriate that we should do them the respect of spending some time to focus on what it is that they've told us. If it's with your support, Mr. Chairman, I would propose to sort of walk through this analysis. It may not be perfect. Certainly, the headings that I've used have been are my own and are not the words of the individual commenters. But what I've tried to do is boil down the essence of the arguments and recommendations being made by the commenters into categories. So almost a term, you know, when we put this out for public comment, it was just please send us any comments. Nothing really very specific in terms of questions, and I've tried to sort of turn this into a multiple choice results by picking out the options out of the comments that have been raised themselves by the respondents.
Malcolm, could I interrupt you for a moment?
Yes, go ahead.
Caboose has his hand raised, and so my question to you, Malcolm, would be, would you like to manage the queue while you're speaking, or would you like me to do that?
That's a very good question. Let's take Cavusa's point first, because I saw him on the mailing list first, and I think he had a question about whether we should even be going through these public comments like this. So why don't we take Cavusa now, and then afterwards, if we do then carry on to go through this paper, perhaps you would manage the queue while I speak to it.
Thank you, Malcolm. And in managing the queue, once I get it, I will try to bring up any hands that are raised at a good moment. So thank you, and Caboose, go ahead.
Thank you, Malcolm, and thank everybody. My question is that when we start to review the responses, at the beginning of the time we receive, in the middle of the period, or at the end of the deadline, we start to review the reply received. Because if you start earlier, that may give rise to some misunderstanding of situations. My question is this. And the second question is that all of these things that was put to public comment was agreed in the CCWG with number of participants starting from 28 up to 45. Now, if you receive a comment of 5 persons, saying that that was not correct and proposing different things, does this 5 response override the decision of 45 or not? Because I fully agree with the public comment. I have full respect for the public comment, but those people attending CCWG are also members of the public. So they cannot be subordinated by very fewer number of the replies received. This is a shortcoming in entire ICANN public comment. You have to have something quite clear, but not because of the very little amount or less number of the people opposing to what was agreed by the greater number. We abandon what we have agreed and yield to the minority given the comment. That is a problem, because I looked into some of these statistics and I have problems. 45 people agreed for something and 8 people disagreed with that. What do? We overwrite the 45 people decision by these 8 people without listening to the debate. Why we get 45 days, for instance, or why we get 12 months? There were many, many, many discussions, and all of a sudden somebody from the when you come and say, no, I don't want 45, I want 180. This is correct? This is a good way to proceed? Just one question. Thank you.
David, do you want to answer or shall I?
I will make a brief statement, and then if you would please speak to the specifics, Malcolm, and let me apologize to Caboose a little bit. I have a not-so-great connection, but I did read Caboose's mail, and I believe I heard most of the comment. Let me just note that with respect to timing, our counsel have indicated that we do have a timing issue that we need to address. And then I would say that what we're involved in here is addressing comments that the public made. And I think that we need to go through the comments. I think that's exactly what you are doing, what you were in the process of doing, Malcolm, with respect to the timing of the claims. And I think that once we have these discussions on the phone, we will, in all likelihood, end up coming back out to the list and saying, as a result of these discussions, here is where we, that is the leader of this particular issue, believe that the IRP IO team should fall. So I have a feeling that we'll wrap this up on the list. And so I would encourage you, Caboose, to join the list and restate what your concern is. But I do think it's an important exercise to go through these comments and that Malcolm is on the right track. That's my comment. Malcolm, back to you.
Thank you, David. I would also add that my understanding of the procedure varies from Caboose's. Caboose just said that the CCWG as a whole had agreed these rules of procedure. Now, I'm not sure that that's whether his understanding or mine is the accurate one, but my understanding was that that had not happened, that the CCWG had simply agreed to put these draft rules of procedure out for public comment, but had not settled on approving these rules of procedure yet, and it was actually absolutely envisaged that this review of the public comment would happen and that our recommendation would be required to the CCWG before it would decide how to proceed, if at all. So having said that, I do think that we should go through the comments that have been received, and I've tried to provide some structure to this. And I've tried to separate these out into the different issues that were covered, because there were multiple issues that were said. Some of them are arguments that have been raised in support of a particular position. Some of them, there were some clear recommendations in some of them. But it is worth picking through. What we can see, I think, that one reason why I think this is particularly worth doing is that when you compare the people who have made particular points, it is not always the same people making the same points or the same groups of people agreeing on the same points. But actually you have a kaleidoscope. While you have a degree of commonality on some issues, the arguments that are being put by persons 1 and 2 on one issue will not be then 1 and 2 be saying the same thing on the next issue. It will be 1 and 3 or 1 and 5. On the next issue. So that, I think, in itself shows that people gave real thought and independent thought to this issue before submitting the comments they did. Okay, so working through then, the first thing, the first question, support for the proposal that there should be a 45-day deadline. How much support did we see in the public comment? In here, I would draw attention to ALAC. ALAC stated that they specifically recognized the effort put in drafting an updated set of procedures that address the delicate balance between due process and expedited resolution times that will help both provide both certainty and celerity to applicants in the IRP processes. Now, I would read that comment as being a general statement that ALAC is content with our proposal as a whole. It is not a specific support for the 45 days in particular, but I think it's content with it. That comment stands out because it is the closest I could find in any of the comments submitted to anyone expressing support for the 45-day deadline. There was also support from Mr. Richard Hill for the principle of a fixed time bar. I think this is something that Greg has referred to as the principle of repose, not a term I was previously familiar with, but the idea that after 12 months after the action, there must be a hard cutoff. Richard Hill wrote in with a principle supporting principle for that. He was the only person that did. Moving on.
Before you move to the next one, Caboose has his hand raised.
Caboose, come in,
yes.
Please.
Yes. No problem. My first question was not answered, and I'm not convinced of what Malcolm said, but I don't want to raise it now. I will raise it at the CCWG. My question is that, suppose that CCWG agreed with each stage, let's say 45 days. We put in a public comment, and we had 5 replies saying that 400 days, but not 45 days. What do we do? Do we agree with that?
Caboose, we certainly, I mean, as the process as I understand it, we are, the very fact of having public comments sends a clear signal that we are supposed to consider that and take into account what is said. If what you are concerned about is the notion of counting heads, so simply just saying, oh, well, there was only one that said this and there were 7 that said the opposite, I don't think that should be decisive. But for myself, I think we should take it into account, but that we should give greater emphasis to the arguments that have been put by the people that made the points, rather than simply counting noses. That is why I've put out this analysis here, to attempt to assist us in giving greater attention to what people have said, rather than just simply doing a tally. So in that sense, I'm suggesting the same as you, Kavis. David, go ahead.
Thank you. I also want to mention reply to Kavis, and that is the implementation of the IRP IoT is a creation of bylaw section 4.3 specifically. And so in that respect, our work is going to be managed by that bylaw, and so we're not reporting back to the CCWG in that sense. Basically, the board is going to approve the rules or not. You know, we have to, after public consultation. So it's not quite like an Article 27 of the bylaws. We're not quite like Workstream 2, and I think that's important to keep in mind. Anyway, enough said. Back to you, Malcolm. Thank you.
Yes,
thank you, David.
I didn't ask for counting the heads. I said that if the time is 45 days and the reply are 450 days, we submit the 450 days to the board. Is this a practical approach? Because 440 days have a lot of difficulties. There was some logic why we selected 45 or 50, but not 180.
Well, Caboose, that is something that we will have to consider, how we proceed on the basis of this. But I have actually suggested that the first step in that is to understand what it is that the public comment has said. So if you would kindly bear with me while we conduct this analysis, then we will have to decide as a group how to proceed.
Yes, so, I appreciate if you allow me to finish my sentence, then come in. Nevertheless, you interrupted my intervention. No problem. Go ahead, please.
Okay. Of those that said 45 days is too short, there were 8 of them. And the kinds of numbers that were put out, 3 of them, AFNIC, Auerbach, and NCSG, had said 180 days. That's 6 months. 2 of them, INTA, a trade association, and Richard Hill, that said 90 days. The registry stakeholder group, I think that was, said eliminate it altogether. And ISPCP.music and Lynx just said it's too short. Additionally, and this goes to the reasoning, 3 respondents specifically picked out the claim that 45 days would be, I use the word bias, that's my word rather than theirs, but it would certainly affect different types of participants differently. and therefore would be unfair to some in the views of those commenters. NCSG specifically said, I remember, that non-contracted parties would have a harder time of complying with 45 days than contracted parties would. Then we move on to the question of this issue of repose. Should we have a fixed limit of 12 months or some other period that does not relate to the knowledge of the time, the knowledge of the impact, but relates only to the time after the action that is being complained about has happened? And you'll remember that this is specifically the thing that Sidley has warned is problematic in terms of conflicting with the requirements of the bylaws. Now, there were seven respondents said specifically and in very clear terms that they thought that this was wrong in principle. They were Sullivan, Rosenzweig, the CCG from Delhi, NCSG, Dot Music, the Business Constituency, and Links. There was a lot of additional reasoning offered in support of those the contention that this is wrong in principle. I've tried to pull those out so that we can understand that better. And the main arguments being raised were, firstly, that it would undermine the effectiveness of the IRP at ensuring the mission limits restriction upon ICANN. Those points made by Rosenzweig, NCSG, and Links, which gave an extended example of how that might happen. Another one was, and slightly related there, the argument that there should be no deadline if ICANN violates core principles. And Auerbach raised that point, as well as Links. Then there was the argument that if something conflicts with the bylaw, every valid complaint should be heard. That was one raised by Rosenzweig, CCG, Delhi, and Links. Then possibly the largest point that was made, most popular point raised, was the idea that this fixed limit would not align with the actual reality of how long ICANN policy processes take, that they take years to come to fruition, and therefore it might not be possible to bring such a challenge to them within 12 months because the process itself takes much longer than that. And that argument was made by Rosenzweig, by the non-commercial stakeholder group, by ISPCP, by the business constituency, by CCG Delhi, by Inter, by Dot Music, and by Links. There were suggestions offered as to how to resolve that. Richard Hill appeared, and NCSG clearly stated that they would recommend differentiating between policy type issues and administrative issues. So if ICANN makes merely an administrative issue, then having a fixed deadline would be acceptable. But on a policy question where there could be a challenge that this was fundamentally against the core values of ICANN or outside its mission, then they wouldn't want to see any kind of limit to that at all. That was argued for by NCSG, and I think it was argued by Hill, although another statement in a separate submission by Hill appeared to contradict that. And then there was also a distinction not between policy and administrative decisions, but between policy and facially invalid decisions. And that distinction was offered by the business constituency and was also offered by CCG Delhi. The NCSG also argued that the 12 months, again, would differentially affect different types of IRP claimants, and that this would unfairly impact non-contracted parties who would be less able to access it than contracted parties. So that was the argument. Those were the main arguments as to why the repose should be removed altogether as being wrong in principle. There were others that said that 12 months is too short, that didn't in the alternative, wished it removed altogether, but if it's not removed altogether, wanted to be longer, or didn't say that they wished it removed altogether, but did say that it was too short. Auerbach, Rosenzweig, into the registry stakeholder group and the business constituency, all said that. So there you see Inter that recommended a two-year period, did not disagree, was not listed amongst those that disagree within principle, whereas the business constituency did disagree with it in principle, but offered in the alternative, if that's not acceptable, well, it should be 3 years in their view. So those were the main points of major principle. There were then some supplementary points that were made on more points of detail.
Can I interrupt a second? It's David McCauley. Here's my question to you. I think you've gone through the gravamen of the concern in the, with respect to the time periods. My request would be that maybe in a follow-up on the list we could take the ancillary issues up with the group. But the reason I'm concerned is just the time of the call, and so I thought we ought to try and get to questions, if that's okay with you. And if it is okay, Caboose has his hand raised.
Okay. In terms of how we would move forward, there is actually one thing that comes up in the ancillary that I would suggest is the first threshold question that we would need to address before deciding how to deal with the gravamen and the main issue, and that's whether or not
have a moratorium.
Okay, that
sounds fine. Before you bring that up, let's ask Caboose to take the floor with his question.
Caboose.
Yes. Irrespective of what time later on we agree at the level of this group and I want to say I have never heard any process without any time limit. Administrative process, you have to prepare your tax paper, you have to pay your tax fees, regulations, so on and so forth. So those people saying they have removed the time, they are not logical persons. We need to have time. What time would be the good one? This is something we could discuss. But we could eliminate the possibility that removing all the time limits, that doesn't work. This is something that at least we have to agree before going to the process. Otherwise, we come to the issue that someone wants no time limit on the lower part, no time limit on the upper part. So that would be a total disappointment. So we need to have a time. What would be the correct time after the comment received, full comment received? That is something we could discuss, that we could eliminate the exclusions of no time at all. Thank you.
Okay. That's slightly preempting the threshold question that I was going to raise that two of the constituencies had put in, the business constituency and the ISPCP, had both recommended that actually we have a moratorium on this. Not that we necessarily never have a time limit on this, but that from a process point of view, that we go ahead with updated supplementary procedures for the time being without any new time limit added, and then review the impact and study the impact and study the issue over a longer period rather than doing it at this time. Now, the BC does argue that there is no time threshold at the moment, and therefore this is a novelty, and there is therefore no urgency about introducing it. Actually, I'm not entirely sure that they are correct that there is no time threshold at the moment, but there we are. But that was what they argued. If we were to go with that, I wondered how we would do so. And it struck me that there were multiple options. And one, which Caboose would clearly dismiss immediately from what he's just said, would be to simply say there shall be no threshold, there shall be no time period, and that would be our recommendation. It struck me that there was another way of implementing this that one we could consider, which is to remove any explicit and numerical time bar, but instead to say that it will be within the discretion of the IRP to strike out any claim for being too late if, in their opinion, it was so late that a fair hearing could not be achieved and that the IRP's purposes could not be successfully delivered. That would be a second option. The third option, I would suggest, and the third and final option I would suggest, is that we were, is that we say, no, we would not do a moratorium, and that instead we have to construct a revised time bar that is consistent with the bylaws at a minimum requirement, and that we can defend as being the appropriate threshold in reply to the issues that have been raised by the public comments. That may mean conforming to the public comments' opinions, or if it, it means, or if we disagree with them, if, that we can say why we have done so, so in a way that is convincing, so that, because it's not going to be us that decide whether or not these procedures go ahead. It will be firstly the CCWG and then ultimately the board. And anything that we say will have to have a convincing explanation as to why we have done it. So the third option, I think, would be about constructing that. But the, I would suggest, David, that the first threshold question we need to decide is whether the group agrees with the business constituency that actually this should be put off until a much later date for more detailed study, or takes the view that Cavus does, that that is, needs to be taken off the table immediately, and that we go ahead with constructing something that is bylaws compatible.
Thank you, Malcolm. There are two hands, Becky first, and then I raised my hand because I want to speak as a participant rather than the lead. So, the Becky, the floor is yours.
Thanks. I have a question here because I want to make sure we understand what we're talking about. When you're talking about that there should be no time period, are we talking about repose or a period of time within which you must file? And I think that Cavus, in my experience, is correct that there is always some outer limit of the time after, you know, that sort of starts at the time you either know or should know how something is going to affect you. You have a period of, you know, 3 years, 2 years, whatever the statute of limitations is. So I just want to make sure I understand what we're talking about. Are we talking about the period of time to file after you know or should have known how you're going to be affected, or are we talking about the outer repose? You know, there is a, you must file within 12 months of the event or something.
Thank you, Becky. Remember, this is not my proposal. This is responding to the inputs raised, and I was picking out something that I thought was a threshold issue first, and it's the business constituency, and that, and I will read to you their paragraph on this, and they boldened it to make sure we didn't miss it. Yeah, and they say, in the light of these concerns, the business constituency recommends that the IRP IoT impose a moratorium on imposing any time limits related to bringing forth an IRP until further studies can be conducted by the ICANN community to assess the potential impacts of such time limits. That's why I say this is a threshold issue. So I don't think that's just about the repose. I think that recommendation is that we should have a moratorium on anything and a study period and further study of the impact. Now, whether or not we accept that recommendation is a separate matter, but I think that they are speaking there not only to repose, but to the whole thing. And really, we need to decide whether or not we accept that. If we accept that, then we can stop. If we don't accept that, then fine, we can put that aside and say, right, well, we've disposed of that.
Thanks, Malcolm. Excuse me. I'm next, and I'm speaking as a participant here. And I have a comment and a question. The comment is I would personally be opposed to the idea that the business constituency is making here. And I think we are engaged in this timing issue in a really difficult balance. balancing act of trying to make sure that a claimant has a fair chance to bring a claim and that ICANN is protected from sort of constant exposure to old, stale claims, whatever it might be. I'm not sure I'm using the right terminology. But I think that a time limit, which typically ensues in courts and arbitration, is a fair thing, and we ought to try and nail this down. My question to you is, and I know there's a lot of comments and there's a lot of words and all, but can we cut through this Gordian knot, perhaps, by just saying whatever time period we're speaking of, it could be 45 days, it could be 1 year, whatever we settle on, whatever that number is, that if somebody brings a claim within that time of the time that ICANN took the action, or the time from that action causing a harm to the claimant, wouldn't we solve this problem, perhaps maybe, and if need be, in conjunction with your suggestion that the panel could have discretion to allow an out-of-time claim if fundamental fairness required it? I mean, wouldn't that cut through all of this?
Need to understand more clearly your proposal, David. Are you saying the later of those two periods, the earlier of those two periods? What exactly are you proposing?
Both of them. In other words, a rule that would say a claimant must bring a claim within X number of days of ICANN taking the action, or that same number of days within which the claimant should have known of the harm that was caused to him, whichever of those dates is later.
Okay.
Yes. And then maybe having a paragraph that saying the panel could, in extraordinary circumstances, dispense with the time limitation if justice or fundamental fairness required it. That's basically what I'm suggesting. I mean, would that cut through this?
It would cut through a very large proportion of it. It would, by saying whichever is the later, you would satisfy opposition on the grounds that the 12 months repose is wrong in principle, because it was if the period of after knowledge comes later than that, then it would still be valid. So that would satisfy all of that and would deal with a very large bulk of it. It wouldn't deal with everything. We'd still have to say deal with the issue of picking exactly how many days. Is it 45 days, 180 days, or whatever? You would also have to consider whether even that 12 months figure was the right number. There is, in particular, the NCSG keeps coming back to the same point, that the number as well as being wrong in principle, in their view, is biased in that it is harder for a non-contractor party to adhere to than a contractor party. And we'd have to decide whether we accept that comment, and if we do, then pick an alternative number, or maybe we don't accept it, in which case we're dealing with it. So there would still be that would need to be considered. But if we did what you said, we would certainly have cut out a big and thorny part of it, which is this issue of repose, which has got most of the opposition and which is opposed by Sidley.
Thank you, Malcolm. Next hand up is Caboose. Malcolm, after Caboose's question, could you summarize it, please? I'm having a very hard time. I think it's my connection. I'm getting much of what Caboose says, but not necessarily all. So, Caboose, you have the floor.
David, I am not in favor of your proposal as supported by Malcolm. What you are saying, we would have a starting point deadline. And then if somebody bring a claim and that deadline was harm to him or her, then the panel will decide to extend that. That is not correct. I am opposing to that process. What I can do, at least suggest that, I take the approach proposed by business constituency, but in the reverse direction. We go ahead with whatever time limit that we establish, whether 45 or 60 in the lower, 12 months or 18 months in the higher, put it into the trial test of 2 years. If something comes and then shows that there is deficiency, we review that after some time. But you have to start from something. You could not start on moratorium for years and then come up some things that may cause problems for the people that would have difficulties, cases to come to the panel within the 3 years. So I don't think that neither your proposal nor the PC proposal is acceptable. This is totally negating what you have done during the months of the first work stream. So we have to have some time limit. Whatever time limit we could agree based on initial proposal and comment received. But no public comment or moratorium public comment or what you say provisional public comment, provisional deadline and then corrected by the panel according to the claim of the people is not working. It's impractical. I cannot agree with that. Thank you.
Thank you very much,
David.
How come I could hear that? So back to you now.
You could hear that. Okay. The only thing I would add to that is that the last part of Cavusis' recommendation that whatever we do should be subject to a review after a defined period to see whether it's working or not was also one of the ancillary points that was made. It was made by ALAC. I think the group as a whole has to take a view here. David's proposal would be welcomed by the great bulk of those that replied to the public comment insofar as that is, it would be welcomed by them. It would certainly simplify how we go forward. The difficulty that I see with going forward with what we have at the moment, as Kazavu suggests, apart from the fact that we clearly have substantial and well-reasoned opposition to it from a number of parties, is the opposition from Sidley. Sidley warned us that this is inconsistent with the bylaws. So I think we could expect that if we do go ahead with this, it will not be accepted at a later stage in the process, whether that is by whether it's the CCWG doesn't accept it in the face of the legal advice to the contrary, or maybe the board would say that they couldn't accept it given that it's been advised as being incompatible with the bylaws. So I think we would have to do something to that, and so respectfully, I respectfully disagree with Cavusis' recommendation on that. But I note that there's, I don't think this should be just me, David, and Cavusis. I would be very keen to hear others. I see that Becky is speaking in the chat. I would be willing to dispense with an absolute repose, but very uncomfortable without a statute of limitations commencing from a knows or should have known standard. 6 months from the time you know or should have known that you have will be harmed, plus David's fundamental fairness caveat. Okay, that seems, Becky seems to be therefore clarifying and really supporting David's proposed way forward. When I say that I think that this would deal with most of the comments in the chat, I'm trying to act neutrally as chair in that, but certainly it's clear that my comments were included in that, and I would be comfortable with that as a way forward as well. I think that would provide a good way forward for myself. Who else is on the call that hasn't given a view yet? Can we have some more views from anyone that hasn't?
Malcolm, it's David, and I will keep my eye out for hands up in response to your request. But another way I think we can wrap this, because I would like to tee up the next issue, another way to wrap this is we inevitably will have to work on the list. And so my request to you will be that you come out on list and summarize the discussion, sometime in the next, whenever you can.
Yeah.
Summarize the discussion and invite people to comment on the list, including ICANN Legal and Jones Day. I know we have reps from both on the call, so please feel free to weigh in and ask people to comment on the list, and then we'll go from there. And I think that we will inevitably have to work on the list as well. So does that sound like a fair way to wrap this up?
Sounds great.
And Malcolm, personally, you know, I'm happy to work with you on trying to come up with a format so that we might come up with a format that speaks to instigating discussion and allowing folks to know that we're moving towards resolution here. So
yeah.
So I'll be in touch with you the next day or so trying to figure out how we might be able to do that.
Yes. I just briefly note, Becky, your comment on the chat has been noted for the minutes, and it is it also is reflected by one of the public comments as well about how it relates to CEP. I'm trying to pick out which. Ah, yes, it was the registry stakeholder group that made that point as well. So that's duly noted.
Thank you very much, Malcolm. I would like to move on to the next substantive discussion, which deals with parties and joinder and consolidation, those kinds of matters. I have volunteered to take that up, take the lead on that particular issue, and I believe that everybody on the list has seen some materials that I sent forward earlier this week. Bernie just reminded us that we're running out of time on this call, so I would like to tee this issue up, and then what I intend to do is come out on the list, just like I asked Malcolm to sort of re-tee up this discussion and ask for input and try and move this forward. I used the comments by Fletcher to act as a catalyst for what I was going to say, and I'll get to that in just a minute, but there are two hands up. So first, Caboose, you have the floor. I'm asking commenters now to please be brief. Thank you. Caboose?
If you adjust the time, I have no problem. But if you have a new approach, that should go again to public comment. If it's a totally new approach, that is what you propose, it should go to the public comment. Because it's not talking about adjustment of the time. You need things or combine two processes. So I know Malcolm doesn't like my proposal. He put his objection. It would work respectfully and so on, it doesn't matter, but I am not in favor of doing something totally brand new. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. Liz, you have the floor.
Hi, David. Yes, I missed the comment, the proposal that you made. Is it possible for you to put that in writing in the chat on the proposal about timing?
I'm not sure I follow, Liz. Could you mention that? Could you state that one more time?
I think you made a proposal about timing on the issue of time bar, and I'm wondering if you can put that in writing.
Yes. I probably won't be able to put it in chat during this call, but the suggestion I just made to Malcolm in the discussion, I will try and recapture. Or actually, Malcolm will probably do it in his summary. But if it's inadequate, if Malcolm, you know, I will make sure it gets on the list. But right now,
Becky's made something in the chat that I think summarizes and what David's point is. So I think if you read what Becky Bertou, the comments from 1342 onwards. I think that is what David suggested, so you can see it now, and we'll confirm that on the mailing list.
Thank you, Malcolm. Liz, I take it that will that address what you want?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much. So, getting back to the joinder issue. Let me just speak to it. We really don't need to put it on the screen right now. But what I'm using Fletcher as a catalyst. They're certainly not the only party that talked about joinder and parties. For instance, the non-commercial stakeholder group made a similar comment. But Fletcher basically pointed to the fact that the applicant guidebook from the 2012 round of new GTLDs basically did not provide an appeal to people who lost before an expert panel. You know, those were the panels that heard legal rights objections, string confusion objections, and community objections. But now the bylaw explicitly says that expert panel decisions can be brought to IRP. And so Fletcher is making the point that we in the rules need to be clear and explicit about parties who won before the expert panel. Therefore, they're not likely to bring a claim. Parties that lost are likely to bring a claim. And in doing that, Fletcher's question is, what about the parties that won? How are they going to be heard? And so while we're in this particular call, reaching the top of the hour, I can't get into detail. I will on the list. That's really the issue, and I think they raised an important issue. Before I say more, Liz, you have your hand again, so let me ask you to take the floor.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's an old hand.
Oh, I'm sorry. So Fletcher suggested three safeguards. One, that we should have a rule that provides actual notice to all the original parties before the expert panel. Two, that we should provide a mandatory right to intervene to all the parties. I mean, they can decline it, but they would have a right to do it. And three, require the IRP panel to hear from everybody that was involved below before they give any interim relief. Frankly, I think these are sensible provisions. They gave us draft language. I've gone through it. Some of it doesn't match up quite to the bylaws, and so my intent is to take this issue along with challenges to consensus policy, which I sort of joined because Fletcher joined them, and I'm going to come to the list, like, much like Malcolm is going to do. Now, Malcolm's coming to the list in the next week or so will be a summary of our discussion. Mine will have to be more because we haven't had a chance to discuss this yet. But it will recognize that we are in a time crunch and we have to have sort of a hybrid way of operating, taking some issues up on the phone and taking other issues up on the list. And so I'm looking forward to doing that. But now that we have a minute left, let me sort of wrap that and ask if anybody has any other business to bring up on this call. I don't see any. Whoops, Caboose, you have a hand up. You have the floor.
David, at this last moment, you propose a revolutionary action saying that those who have lost the case bring it back to the IRP. This would result in sort of instability in the entire process. The process was dealt with, someone wins, someone lost, and finished. And now from 2012 in 2017, you want that the people they lost bring back the case. What to do with that? Why we have to do that? Why there is such a retroactive applications? I'm not in favor of all of these new things that you propose. There's no logic behind that. Maybe you have mobilized few people to agree with you, but I'm one that opposing to that. It is not legitimate that if somebody lost, bring back the case. This is an instability in the whole process. Somebody win and somebody may go ahead with the project, and now all of a sudden you bring it back to the IRP, and then in that would reverse the decision to what happened to that investment. What happened to that process? This is totally instability of the whole process. Please kindly be careful what you're proposing. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. We have to wrap, but just a brief response. The bylaw section 4.3N requires that the rules of procedure ensure fundamental fairness and due process. And then it says, shall at a minimum address the following elements. One of those is issues relating to joinder intervention. I actually think we're within the scope of what we need to do, but I take your point and we'll mention it in my summary and trying to move this issue forward. We are out of time, and I want to respect everybody's time, so I will say thank you to everybody. Thanks especially to Malcolm for leading us on the timing issue, and thank you to all for participating. Please look for action items on the list, and please engage on the list, and I hope everyone has a good day, and thank you all for participating. And that's the end of this call. Thanks very much.